Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fed. Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. Cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live. Intelligent media for the politically aware. From Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, February the 25th, 2017, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada and time zone south of that, and a good late afternoon to evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And, of course, wherever you're listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Riyadh today, I can speak, had a high of 64 degrees under largely overcast skies. This week we saw a couple light thunderstorms blow through the area, but in between that, temperatures reached into the middle to upper 70s, sending a hint that spring is just around the corner, and with it, warming temperatures. This coming week, in fact, temperatures are expected to climb back into the middle 70s towards the middle of the week, so spring really is getting close and hinting out there, at least hinting there's a breath of spring in the air. Tonight, temperatures should hit about the middle 50s towards the end of the useful part of the evening, which is around 1 o'clock a.m. locally, while we are expected to hit an ultimate low of around 51 degrees in the hour before sunrise. Now, winds have been pretty much non-existent, but what little wind we have had has been blowing out of the northeast, and those winds should shift to the north as the evening settles in. But it's not a whole lot of wind here. A couple nights ago, there was some wind, a lot of dust in the air, but that lasted just for about, 12 hours or so. It wasn't so bad. So good morning, everybody. I trust and hope your Saturday is going well, and welcome to another 3 hours. That's right, 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. This week, there were some, I guess, some key events coming out of the United States and Europe. We've had the Trump speech at CPAC. We had Pence's speech at the Jewish Republican Coalition. And then we've had, like, Marine Le Pen. So we're going to cover some of these stories as the day gets going, try to get you some updates on what's going on in the Middle East, perhaps in hour number three. Joining us in hour number two is going to be Lady Renouf. I think Michelle Renouf. Lady Michelle Renouf, she's going to be joining us from London, and we'll be talking about what's going on in London, her efforts at exposing this anti-Semitism racket, or whatever we want to call it, this racket that uses anti-Semitism to trump speech, or whatever the case may be. But Lady Renouf will be joining us in hour number two. She is a noted revisionist out there. So it should be a good second hour, and we hope you're looking forward, or we'll be able to be attend that. You know, sit back, relax, and you'll be available for that. You know, it's been an interesting week. You know, it's been a doubling down, per se, as to what's been going on in the United States. You know, we've talked a lot about the media, obviously, and what's going on with the media. You'd think I'd have that darn thing queued. I don't seem to have it queued. I think this is the one that's queued. Okay, good. I think I've got everything queued, guys. But anyways, you know, it's been an interesting week, you know, with Trump doubling down if you're not paying attention, I hear you, but Trump has kind of like been doubling down on what he calls the fake media. They're saying I'm a bit overmodulated. Okay, I can always, thank you, I can always calm it down a bit. Sounds good in my head. Really? Everyone's saying audio's terrible. Okay, how's that, guys? I've cut it down a little bit. And let me know now. I've tried to modify this a little bit, so let me know. I've cut back on the gain here. Let's see. Where were we? We were talking about how my sound is not so good. Anyways, let me know, guys, in the chat room again. I think it should be okay now. We were talking about the media a lot. You know, the media has been the enemy of America, et cetera, et cetera. And I got a clip here. Actually, I can't play it just yet. I'm going to have to plug it in. yeah, it sounds better, they say. Let's see. That's not a good thing. I had everything queued except for I didn't plug the darn thing in. Okay, let's go to the Milo story. Good morning, everyone. You know, it's afternoon here, everybody. It's like, what, 6:08 in the afternoon here. So it's I forgot one key thing. You know what? Just bear with me for like 10 seconds. It won't take me long. Hold on. Just give me 10 seconds of silence, everybody. I know it's not great radio, but hold on. Okay, we're getting close to actually being set up. I was didn't set certain things up on my audio here. And I can't play things. So now let me go speakers here. I'm going to go here. All right, save that. We should be okay now. Guys, we're going to play this clip to get the show rolling. And it's all to do with Trump and the fake media. And we're going to deal with this story first. So here's the clip, and we'll be right back right after the clip.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake.
We have just learned here at CNN that CNN has been blocked from a White House gaggle.
Afternoon, the White House has just frozen out media organizations that President Trump has blasted as fake news. Not included were the New York Times newspaper, CNN, and the website Politico.
I'm Jake Tapper of the White House today, appearing to take punitive action against news organizations. He did not allow news outlets, including CNN and the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and Politico and others, to attend that off-camera briefing, which is known as a gaggle.
A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
And indeed, they are the enemy of the people. Now, what we've been trying, not what we've been trying, what we have been doing over the years here is raising an issue about mind war. And mind war was put forward by the Templist Set. And essentially, mind war is intended to use the media outlets that the U.S. possesses. That would be the CNNs, the ABCs, NBCs. These types of organized media outlets, and use those as a way to project power through propaganda. And this fake media that the mainstream media tried to put forward in the very earliest, let's say a month, 2 months ago, right after the election, the whole point of the media was intended to essentially discredit the alternative medias that are out there. But the truth of the matter is that the CNNs, the Fox News, and all these other companies out there, in some respects, they're irrelevant. We don't need them. As Trump was talking about in his speech before the CPAC this week, which is the Conservative Political Action Coalition, I believe, or conference, he mentioned a few interesting points. I'd like to raise some of these points. Let's see if I have some of these. Yeah. You know, he talked about how the fake media and how essentially this media is, again, an enemy of the people. Let me see if I can find this real quick. You know, he's basically going over a lot of points we've already heard before. He's saying that, you know, if you want to take back the country, meaning the United States, and this is going to be true of the UK, it's going to be true of Sweden. It's certainly going to be true of France and Germany. The people who have put themselves into power, they have a huge vested interest. The media out there has its own agenda, a globalist agenda. Now, that globalist agenda is something that we prefer to call here on Inside the Eye Live a Jewish agenda. It's an area where essentially it's Jewish ideology, it's Jewish managed at the elite level, and of course you have your rectified goys down below. But nonetheless, it's largely a Jewish issue. And a lot of people don't get that. You know, they just haven't figured that out yet. They haven't figured out that 94%, that's right, 94% of America's media isn't owned by Americans. It's really owned by corporate interests that are largely in service of the state of Israel. The state of Israel and the Jewish people, I mean, by and large, they're organized structures. For the life of me, I can't figure it out apart from vindictiveness, as they wish to essentially destroy Western Europe. Knowing the vindictiveness of Jewish ideology, and you can see it in their Torah, you can see it in their Talmud, you can see it in their actions to this day. They hold grudges for things that happened to them thousands of years ago. And if you think not, well, just understand that Kushner, Jared Kushner, the son-in-law to Donald Trump, recently gave to Donald Trump an arch of Titus replica as part of some gift. I didn't catch all the story, but they actually gave a Arch of Titus. Now, Arch of Titus, of course, was all about the sacking of Jerusalem in 66 AD or something to that effect. So Jewish people hold this stuff in their hearts and their minds. And it, of course, it's a little bit psychotic in some respects because they think about this from childhood. It's ingrained in them. Their rabbis impress upon them. By the time they get to adulthood, they are kind of fueled by this seething kind of hatred towards pretty much everybody and everything. I'm not sure how this creation came to planet Earth, but it is really, it's kind of like a nasty little creation, this idea, this Jewish ideology. And they manifest themselves, as we discussed kind of last week also, in the media. They want to preach to us what we can say, what we can do, what's important, what's not important. See, they're agenda-driven. They aren't really driven by this idea of reporting news. And I know we're the media and journalism, it's ideological. It's not really, there's never a perfect world, in other words, when it comes to ideology. But these guys, they just wish, it seems, to impose these ideas upon us. Now, if you looked at the media in the United States this week about Donald Trump talking about the fake news as an enemy of the American people, Donald Trump, he's a sharp guy, and he's playing this rather well. He says the fake news, but the media assumes that the fake news is the media, and then they'll drop the word fake media and call it media. In other words, it's a huge semantic game being played right now in the press, because still there is the press. For the life of me, I don't watch CNN. I don't watch Fox News. I don't watch any American programming that is Jewish owned in this regard for the most part. I really don't. I just don't see a need for it. If I want to see the comments of Donald Trump's, I can always go, you know, to a search engine and I can go pull the transcripts from his speech. If I want to go see the speech, I can actually go to YouTube or some other channels out there and I can pick up the speech. I don't need CNN anymore. I don't need Fox News for my news. I'll tell you what, you go back to 2001, 2002, 2003, and whenever there was a big event, everybody would be huddled around the television. Those days are over. We don't need to huddle around the television. Most of us are going to huddle around the computers, and we are going to have our particular news feeds, whether it's going to be on a Facebook feed or a Twitter feed or a Gab feed or some other feed that you might be using. Maybe it's an RSS stream. And we can go about out and about and pull all the news from so many different sources. We don't need to rely on a failed false vision that a CNN or a NBC or an ABC News or a BBC that we don't have to rely on these guys anymore. And I think they're having a hard time grasping that. And one of the very first elements of control that needs to be smashed in this great long game war is the media. People like Inside the Eye Live, for instance. You know, we've been fighting this war for how long now? 6 years. Actually, it's longer than that. There's lots of people like me out there. And maybe you're a fan of some other people that are comparable to what we're doing here on Inside the Eye Live. But we've been working tirelessly for years and years, over a decade now, to lay the foundation to where we are today. Now, again, we will say it over and over again, we're not all that happy with what we see coming out of the Trump administration. But if he holds true to what he says he's going to be doing, and we have no reasons to doubt at this stage that he won't, immigration is the key. Immigration must be stopped. There must be a lack of, there must be some reverse immigration. I'll give you an idea about Saudi Arabia, for instance, and I'm here. It's a very tightly controlled immigration policy. You don't come in without a sponsor. That sponsor is responsible for you at the end of the day, or a corporate sponsor. It's impossible. Now, America, we have kind of trappings of this, but not like they have here. Everything is tracked by biometrics here. If you want a phone number, you need to have your phone line linked to a biometric fingerprint. That biometric fingerprint is then linked to your passport, when you know your passport control, or your, what do they call that, your residency permits. It's all controlled. If you overstay one day past your visa requirements, and you have money in the bank accounts here, and you can only get a bank account if you're a resident here, they will block your funds. Those, literally, they will just block your funds. And this is true of a lot of countries out there. I'm not just talking about, I know Korea's like this, South Korea, for instance. I don't know about the rest of the GCC, but I know South Korea is like that, and I know Saudi will block your funds. So, and this happens if you're just one day late. Literally just one day past the visa extension. America needs this level of control. But to get this level of control on your immigrants coming into your country, you're going to have to invest in a lot more. Now, America is a much more open and freer society, and we want to, in some respects, keep it that way. But this is just how, like, it's done here in Saudi. For instance, they did a census a while ago. It was estimated something like 28 million people live in Saudi Arabia, of which something like 20 to 22 million are Saudis, and roughly 6 to 7 million are expatriates. Now, there's a lot of expatriate labor here from Bangladesh, from India, from Pakistan, from the Philippines. And each of these expatriates has the ability to bring their spouses here. And, of course, they become the sponsor for the spouse, etc. And as you bring all of these people here, though, that's a lot of stress put on water supply, electrical supply, schools, and other issues. So what the Saudi government appears to be doing is they want to get rid of as many of these expatriate non-essential family members as possible. And the way they do that is they put a fee, what they call a residency fee, per head. So if you have your wife here and three children, you would have to pay a couple hundred dollars a month essentially, to the Saudi government in order to keep your family here. Now, when I spoke to some Saudis about that, they're saying, well, what we believe, we think that, yeah, this should send a lot of people home and that's good for us. Well, why can't Americans think that way? Why can't Swedes think this way? Why can't we have rational, sound policies like they're practicing elsewhere in the world? And this is probably one of the key issues that we're looking for Donald Trump to deliver upon. You know, he was speaking at this CPAC meeting this week, and he talked about Sweden and how Sweden is just an absolute disaster. And it really is. When you go in, there's no way. I mean, we've had people from Sweden on the show. I've been on Swedish radio. I've talked to a lot of people from Sweden. I've had people from Sweden come to my house in Jordan or meet with me at restaurants in Jordan to discuss certain things going on in Sweden. And Sweden is like probably at one time, as far as the nature goes, the whole environment of Sweden knows, it was a beautiful place. Let's be honest. It is a nice, natural place to live. I think the best place might be Iceland, but Sweden was pretty darn good. Norway was good. Finland, I hear, is fantastic. And the Swedish government, these elites that have ensconced and put themselves through the process into power, are very eager, it seems, to destroy what is Sweden. And Trump referenced something like this, and people in Sweden wanted to take umbrage with it. Like, you know, you're the president of the United States. How can you say that about another country? You know, they're calling in the ambassadors for clarification, etc. But guys, nobody cares about what you guys say in the governments anymore when you are all about destroying your countries. And in the United States, we have a lot of these people still in power. We have the issues well within the deep state. See, they always say this about countries and revolutions. Essentially, what happens is that countries might change, but the police always stay the same. And that's even more true within the intelligence services of countries. Unless you go in and absolutely gut everything out, which can create quite a vacuum, you've got people in power, let's say within CIA, FBI, DH, Department of Homeland Security, Defense Intelligence Agency. These guys are careerists and gals that are careerists, and you cannot assume that in a war against Western civilization, as we have seen here today, as we have seen going on in the past really 50 years now, and people are becoming aware of it, we can't assume that these people are all patriots. You have to assume that this enemy that is trying and seeking to destroy the United States is also ensconced very well within these intelligence services. Trump was tweeting out just yesterday, for instance, hey, we need to out those FBI agents who are leaking information. Well, I have no problem with that. See, the FBI for a long time has been a Mr. Fix-It agency for this criminal corrupt enterprise that has been running the United States for far too long. So there needs to be, again, we can't really stress it enough. There needs to be some type of purge within these systems, FBI, the banking system, Treasury, CIA. In other words, you've got areas inside that you cannot assume are loyal to the United States. You can't tell me after 9/11, honestly, you cannot tell me after 9/11 that, maybe that was why, that what's going on inside of America is full of patriotic fervor. In other words, they're looking out for the best interest of the United States. You cannot assume that. I mean, my goodness. I think I saw a comment the other day, Monica Lewinsky's blouse got more forensic study and research than the entire 911 ground zero spot. So where was the FBI that day? Where was the CIA? Where was the Defense Intelligence Agency? Where were all of these organizations that were supposed to be, quote unquote, protecting the American people on that day? Whatever happened to all those put options on United Airlines? I mean, my goodness, you can't even move nowadays $1,000, $2,000, $10,000 without having to give up all your identification. Yet you guys in the intelligence world, you can't resolve, and we actually respect that, you can't. You can't resolve who was putting the put options out on United Airlines that day, some, what, 15 years ago now, you guys can't solve it? So guys, we get it. You know, we want to support, you know, Trump says he wants to support the men and women in the police and, you know, all of these services. But that support is two-way. You know, that it's not just everybody wants this one-way support, one-way. No, what are they doing to solve the problems? Now, at the moment, we see activity in the United States with ICE, which is the immigration. I'm not even sure what ICE stands for, Immigration Controls Enforcement or something. I don't know what they stand for. But we see movement in the United States, and all of this is very, very good. And it must be. Welcome back, everybody. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Again, today is February the 25th, and good Saturday morning to all of you listening out there in the United States and Canada. Good late afternoon to evening to everybody listening in European and Asian time zones. For hour number two, we are already booked Lady Michelle Renouf. Her website, www.jewishrepublic.com. She's a filmmaker, traditional balletist, lots of things. She's got quite a resume. I have to read up on it a little bit closer here. But nonetheless, she's also noted for her revisionism, historical revisionism. I see her in pictures with Frederick Tobin, for instance. So she's going to be joining us in hour number two. It should be just a fun hour conversation. And then we'll be back in hour number three solo. If you'd like to call in this hour, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. Keep me posted in the chat room. I'm hearing I'm a bit overmodulated today. I'm not sure why that's happening, guys. Really, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on, guys. I don't know how low I can get this thing to go and still work. Let's see. Let me know. Sometimes I just... in the chat room, let me know. I've tried to cut this thing down a bit here. I'm overmodulated, but now I can barely even hear it myself on this side, so... So basically, I don't know what's going on. But let me know. You know, let me know. Maybe it's just my voice, guys. They're saying it's a little scratchy, but let me know. No closer than normal, guys. I don't know what to do, guys. Maybe it's Skype. Maybe the Skype is overmodulated. Let me check my Skype, everybody. Let me try to fix this. Skype. Oh, yeah, the volume on the microphone is... microphone a little bit on the Skype. So yeah, I don't know. You guys, yeah, it's not easy to try to do this when I can't monitor the output. So I don't know. Basically, hello. Anyways, this is listener-sponsored and supported radio. What that means, it relies upon your donations to help keep the network up and running. See, once again, I don't know what you guys want. You know, you want it too high or too low? What do you guys want? Okay. Basically, now it should be okay. Is that okay? Now it's sounding good. Is everything okay? Because I've gone into Skype, had to make some adjustments with my Skype. Okay, so I've made some adjustments with the Skype. It was manually set. I guess Skype wants to control the microphone itself. So it's now live. Okay, we've gone back because I there's certain ways to do this, guys. Anyways, sorry to waste all your time out there in Radioville, but the chat room is just harassing me. I can't get the sound right. These guys have very high tastes out there, you just can't please these guys. You know, they want live radio, they want perfect sound quality, and they want top-notch content, and they expect it delivered now. And of course, having been able to do that for 6 years, I guess they've gotten used to it. So no problem, guys. We all want the same thing. This is listener-sponsored and supported radio. And what it means, it relies upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. So make your way over to, from time to time, again, we look for just monthly. We want to get a monthly stream going for this show. That's right, for this show. So all we want you to do is support. If you listen to this show all the time, go out there, go to freedomslips.com, and just try to support the network. There's some goodies you can buy, and we can you guys are killing me in the chat room. I'm going to just close you guys off. Join us in the chat room, everybody, InsideTheEyeLive.com, and you'll see what I mean. These guys are just brutal today. You guys are just being brutal today, seriously. I got to take – now you guys made me all sweaty, all nervous and all. I never get nervous behind a microphone, but I'm all nervous now. Come on, guys. I got to cut this off. Bye. I can't look at you guys. You guys have just really done it. Oh, where were we? Anyways, we're talking about the network. It relies upon the network. The network relies upon you to help keep the bills paid. I think we try to raise about $2,800 a month for all the infrastructure to run the place. You can actually see the pledges every month coming in the door at freedomslips.com. Again, we got like 83 different hosts here. If each host could bring in X amount of dollars a month, that should cover it every month. And we're not asking to cover the entire station, but we are certainly asking you to cover your fair share type of thing. So, again, make your way over to freedomslips.com and just put together a monthly donation. I don't care if it's $3, $4, $10, $2, $1. You know what? You get 10, 12. Plenty of you folks doing that, and pretty soon it starts to add up. So, again, it's cumulative, and everything adds up at the end of the month. You guys all know how the bills are paid. You have to manage your own bills, I'm sure, at your house. So, again, just do what you can and help keep that up and running. The Cat Report, we are sponsored by the Cat Report, and the ITEL Cat Report is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post. Good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackbird's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn. He is an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Spreaker Network. Cat Report this week is kind of simple. It's been quiet for the most part in Jordan. It's been quieter here. You can see, you know, we're in a good cat area. Lots of cats outside. Sometimes you can see the cats. They are like staring at the window of the front door because there's a lot of residence hotels here. On this street. So it's a quiet street. It's a safe street. There's a lot of cats out and about, but it's funny sometimes when you go out for a walk, when you go get fresh air, the cats are just staring at the doors. And you know, because these cats are clean, that they belong to somebody inside that building. And they're just waiting to be let in. And they're so polite and quiet. But you know they're out there. They're waiting to be just let in the door. And you like kind of feel bad for them. It's like, sorry, man, I can't let you in the door because I don't really know if you're there or not. So I can't help you go into that house. It's not my apartment anyway. So, but you'll see that happen a lot. Now, for us in Jordan, Bruiser has been very quiet, kicking back, not a whole lot of problems. But One Eye has been making a lot of problems the last 2 weeks, 2 days, I should say. He's been basically screaming up a storm starting around 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, the girls are telling me. So, and he can get really, really loud. So if you can imagine a cat at 6:30 in the morning basically screaming at you to get out of bed because he wants to go outside. And he's kind of cute. I know because I've been there before. He'll actually go to the back door where we let him out, and he will stare at the door. He will scream about 5, 6, 7 times, and he'll come into the living room and take a look and see what you're doing. Like, hey, did you hear me? Did you guys hear me? And then he'll go back. He'll scream some more, and then he'll come back to the living room. He'll look at you like, I know you heard me. Why don't you just get up and let me out? Well, they finally had to do that today. They didn't want to let him out, but they let him out today, and he was seen roaming. I live on a reasonably well trafficked street. It's not a main thoroughfare, but it's like a main side thoroughfare. It's not an off street, in other words. It's kind of like a thoroughfare. And so when you go over to the street, across the way, we've got a blank, an empty lot, and cats like to congregate out there for whatever reason. Cats like to hang out in that empty lot. And they sent me like 15 pictures like 40 minutes ago. And that's where One Eye was hanging out. He was just across the lot, just chilling, catching some of the nice sun. We haven't had any sun here, by the way, for about a day and a half, but just chilling, relaxing, and enjoying the time of day. It's a nice weather out there in Jordan. So he just had a great time over there. But it's been quiet. You know, mating season again, we think, is over now. But we're not sure. One Eye seems to think maybe he's got a chance still. So he, I think, is out there trying to do what he can to go find a mate, one last mate, before the season closes for good and we wait till the fall season. But that's about it. Not a whole lot's going on. It's been very, very quiet in Jordan. That's good. And it's been quiet here, and that's good. So, but that is the Cat Report. Again, it's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackbird's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn. He's an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, among many other things. Again, check out his show, everybody. It does very, very well. He's actually beating me for the year. We keep our stats, of course, on all the shows and the ratings of all the shows. And he is actually beating the Fetch right now for all of 2017. And I haven't been able to catch him just yet. So I'm going to have to work extra hard to try to do something to catch Blackbird 9, because apparently you guys like his show. So great to have him come out and fill in the extra time and then be so popular at the same time. So check out his show, everyone. It is called Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club. It's broadcast every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Spreaker. You can get the information at blackbird9tradingpost.org. That's blackbird9tradingpost.org. And just check it out. I know a lot of you have, but if you haven't, go check it out. It's a very popular show now, and it's now in its second year, so it's not a new show anymore. Compared to freshman years, you know, he's gotten through that first year, which is kind of hard, and he's still moving. So go check out the show again on Spreaker. That's Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club. Okay, join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button, and that will get you through the door. We look forward to seeing you there. It's pretty much the regulars have filled in now. So I see Hanshan and Snippets and Road Dogging and pretty much everybody else. I'm not there right now, but who else is there? Frontrial's there. Mona Lott, that's a new name. Mona, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. I don't think I've seen your name here, so welcome to Inside the Eye Live. And Von Hash and a few others. Guys, we've got a great crowd. It's a very educated crowd. And Mer Bailey's there. You know, you cannot go wrong. Of course, Blackbird 9 is there. So you cannot go wrong if you fit in there. Obviously, we don't have a, it's not a trolling environment. It's a good, clean environment. Just a lot of great conversation goes on in the chat room. Some of it with the show, some of it not with the show. But nonetheless, it's a great little place to hang out and listen to the show. You know, this week we saw the fall of Milo Yiannopoulos. And Milo Yiannopoulos is this guy, he calls himself, he had a tour where he went out about on the college circuits for the most part, and his show was called The Dangerous Faggot Tour. And he's basically a gay, bisexual perhaps, Jewish guy that brags about his exploits with black males. And he's out there being sold as the face of white supremacy. Just to kind of give you an idea just how insane certain things are out there. You know, that's not a good thing. Okay, everybody, welcome back. It was an internal issue here. God, no, don't worry, Hanshan. We didn't not pay the bills this time here. At least the hotels paid the bills on time. No, everything is fine. We just lost the network. We've had to reboot everything. I went out walking down the hallway. It is a hotel, everybody, and it's shared with a lot of people inside the hotel. I've had them engineer the network to where we have a little bit of exclusivity here on this side of the hotel, but that's not always the case, and sometimes things happen to the network. But we are back. We do have a call coming in, and Vera, hi. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Vera, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hi. Just called to let you know you were off the air.
You don't need
whatever you were trying to fix. Yeah. You know, when they were complaining that you couldn't be heard, I could hear you more than fine. So it's funny.
Okay.
You know, when you, like they were complaining in the chat, right? Yeah, I heard you great.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Anyways, I just called to say hi.
Yeah, no problem.
And I'll tell you, I got a bit of a cold, so.
Oh, sorry to hear that. So.
Yeah, well, I'm getting over it.
There you go.
It's from hugging someone in the house that had a bad cold. I couldn't wait. It was a whole week he'd been sick. So I finally gave him a hug, and, you know, I thought he was through it, and, well, I got it. So
yeah.
Now I'm dealing with
it. Well, good luck with
it. Anyways, thank you. And I'm waiting to hear your guest.
Yeah, me too. She hasn't confirmed yet on everything. Guys, we're going to do a break. We'll hopefully have Miss Michelle. All right, do you want to stay tuned or just call back? Third session. Okay, welcome back, everybody. It's the Feds Inside the Live Intelligent Media for the Politically Aware. We are trying to reach now Ms. Michelle, Lady Michelle Renouf. It's apparently ringing, but I don't see her answering just yet. She's here. We've already conversed. Okay, everybody, we are back. We're back. I just don't see that Lady Michelle. She seems to have gone offline, so not sure where she is, so what you have to wait for. Okay, in the meantime, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. Feel free to call in. As long as we don't have a guest, we can fill the time. Let me move on over to this Yiannopoulos story. Yeah, I know. It's been a difficult day here. I've almost feel like we've wasted the hour. But join us in the chat if you'd like, Inside the Eye Live again. Click on the live chat button. That will get you in the door. But Yiannopoulos is basically this gay Jewish guy. And And basically, you know, he's not somebody that represents, quote unquote, the white supremacists out there. She's here. Let me try to bring her in now. Okay, it's ringing again. And we're trying to bring Ms. Michelle, Lady Michelle Renouf back on because it should be ringing. Okay, we're back. We are conversing. I've asked Frank to call back. And there's Frank now. Hi, Frank. Welcome back to Inside the Eye Live while we try to solve our technical issues.
Yeah, I just wondered what you thought were the chances or the likelihood that Milo was, an infiltrator. Because, I have this theory, and I think a lot of people would agree, that any time organized Jewry sees a threat to their, their total domination of propaganda and whatnot, they have to send in one of their infiltrators in to take over that threat and transform it and neutralize it into a non-threat.
Well, I've always felt the guy was a plant, quite frankly. We don't know. You know what I mean, Frank? We don't know. But I've always felt he was a plant because he's not really part of the white nationalist crowd. He says he espouses conservatism, whether or not he does. You know, he says a lot of the right things in a lot of cases. But when you look at his side, once you get in the side, come on, who gets up and, like, sings the national anthem and drag like he did at the University of Missouri? Who goes out and brags about having sex with black males? You know, this isn't a guy that I think anybody should hang their hat around, regardless. And if he wasn't Jewish, would he ever have actually gotten the platform that he got? You know, easily they could send up and give somebody else a platform, but they gave it to him. Why?
Exactly.
So I've always felt he was a plant, and I felt that his usefulness ended, so they decided to just take him out. That way they don't have to pay him. They can get rid of him. They don't have to pay him now for his services. And he wasn't successful. Obviously, the white nationalist movement doesn't care about this guy. So he's not all that effective. At the end of the day, he might have been a stopgap, but he's not going to be able to stop the flood that's coming.
I see him making a lot of people foolish, though, because I did see a lot of traditional white males, even in the local media, here defending him and coming to his defense. And I was like, wow, you know. So really what he did was he moved the lines. He moved the framework of the narrative. It's more about turning societal norms upside down and making people think, oh, okay, well, this is the new normal, and we have to be tolerant, and we have to accept these, weirdos as our, as our leaders, the people that we look up to.
Yeah, something to that, if you want to get a gig working in college circuit, you're going to have to be somewhat of a degenerate. That seems to be the message to me. I don't know. I think so, Frank. I thought it was always a plant, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, Dr. David Duke, he basically says the same thing. He tends to believe that the guy was a plant. So, well, I guess we may never know. But I think Alex Jones is a plant too. I'll be glad when his usefulness goes away, so they can throw him under.
Yeah, he's big though. He's like a beast out there. You know what I mean? He's like a beast.
All right, man. I'll let you go.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get Lady Michelle Renouf on the line. Everybody, she's emailed me. She's not able to connect to Skype. This seems to be the problem. So we are trying to dial her again. Oh, that's not, don't want that one. So we're going to try to bring her on one more time. We're having a tough day today, guys. Just a really tough day, technically. Let's see, where'd you go? There you are. So we're trying to ring Lady Michelle Renouf again, everybody. Maybe I just need to go into a two-hour rant, guys. I know that'll break a lot of your hearts here. This is not a good thing. We should just, I don't normally have to do sound checks with people, but maybe this gal is somebody we are going to have to do a sound check on before we try to bring her on. Because she is live, she's communicating, but she cannot get through for some reason. Okay. You know, we talked a lot about words years ago, framing of words. And an interesting thing came out of Donald Trump recently. Let me see if I can find that clip while we're playing here. Not this clip. And not this clip. Is it this clip? I don't know which clip it is. I got so many clips open, I don't even know the clips. Nope. See, I don't even have the clip. Okay, guys. Let's try to move on. I'm not sure we're going to be able to bring her on. She's trying. I cannot reach her, so what can I do? We are like worlds and worlds apart, being in Saudi, and she's over in London. You can check out our website, though, www.jewishrepublic.com. That is jewishrepublic.com. I don't know what she's hinting at here. I think what she's saying is that we need to give Jews a homeland or something like that. So we have to find out. I got to get her online and see exactly what she wants, what she's trying to say. She's a big supporter of Palestine. What'd she say? Tries to catch you but gets no reply. That is strange. So we are not able to get through to her. I'm going to have to drop this chance. I can't solve it and talk at the same time. This is when you wish you had a producer, everybody. Let me see what's going on here. Yeah, not bad, but it's okay. All right, we're going to get into rant mode here a little bit. Just a little bit. You know, I wanted to speak to her. She's been highly recommended. And she's been somebody that was working, I know, with Frederick Tobin for a while. She had been at least pictured with Frederick Tobin, so we wanted to give her a call. But nonetheless, let's go back. I got to find this thing here. File, open, file, open. Shows. We've got so much. This is, gosh, I'm surprised it's this type of a show today, guys. Let's open this one. Yeah, I'm not picking up any audio, guys, from my system here, which is very, very strange. And that makes it like virtually impossible to intelligently do a show. So that is not a good thing. Mike Pence. Mike Pence is the Vice President of the United States. And he was speaking this week at an event called the Republican Jewish Coalition. That's right, the Republican Jewish Coalition. And it was held in Las Vegas, and fairly big event. Okay, that's good. We're going out over the air fine. It's just for whatever reason I can hear nothing over here on my side. I got to reboot all my computer and system, I think, at the break. So hopefully I'll hear the bumper music. Where were we? So Pence is talking with the coalition of the Republican Jewish Coalition. And it says the headline, America Stands with Israel. And again, these are a bunch of Republican donors within the Jewish community. And they are one of the first really to hear from Vice President Mike Pence. Sheldon Adelson, I believe, was there. And Sheldon Adelson is on record as saying that Trump will be the best president ever for Israel. Mike Pence is on record now as denouncing, quote-unquote, anti-Semitism during a visit to a vandalized Jewish cemetery near St. Louis. And he also has announced that he will attend AIPAC's annual conference in March. It's funny, that doesn't surprise most of us at all. But Pence assured the Republican Jewish Coalition that he and Donald Trump would work tirelessly on foreign and domestic issues important to the Jewish community, such as enacting business-friendly policies and supporting Israel abroad. Well, there you are.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Oh, hurrah, hooray, hurrah. Oh,
it's not just you. I've been having a nightmare of a day technically today. So,
oh, I hope it's not my fault. I just hope it
started well before you were online. So, you know, we can we can play the Jewish card and blame everything on you, I guess. But
well, they blame everything on us.
Exactly.
So why not?
They blame everything on us. Folks, finally, you know, I hope you have time today. How's your schedule today?
I'm fine. I'm just more worried about your wonderful listeners who are having to be very patient with,
you know,
the technicalities.
You know, they've been, and it's not just you. Trust me, it's been me. I've been having a tough day. So what's going to happen is we're going to reconnect during the next break, which is in about 7 minutes, so I can try to get my sound back. I'm having a hard time hearing a lot of things I have queued up in the system here. Everybody, this is Lady Michelle Renouf. She was born Michelle Mainwaring. She's originally from Australia. She is by ancestry and naturalization a British citizen. She began her professional career in her childhood as a ballet dancer, a fashion model, and an actress in television and commercials internationally. She is known, I don't see that here, I'm not used to saying lady, so lady. But she, I guess you married, let's just get straight into this. You married in 1991 an international financier, and that kind of introduced you to the global geopolitical climate, didn't it?
Well, it introduced me to not very much, actually, at that stage. It was much later when I had any understanding of what we all understand, or certainly your listeners do. My awakening was rather slow, in fact, because in relation to my advertising career since childhood, as you mentioned, in and later on in since age 7, and later on in as an actress in television commercials internationally since age 15, it wasn't until I actually became a lecturer at the Queensland University of Technology in 1969 and read Vance Packard's book, The Hidden Persuaders, about advertising, that I was able to put together two aspects of my very, very early careers, which was in advertising and also as an understanding of how to package and sell a product, not necessarily in the genuine interests of what it says on the label, and also my understanding of things artistic. And because I was lecturing in fine arts, I put the two ideas together, and it was not, there was not what you call now media studies at that time, or certainly I knew nothing of it, and certainly Queensland knew nothing of it. And I sort of initiated this as part of my English teaching aspect. And so I had some idea from that stage how important advertising was in selling ideas. And I had used the speech between Laertes and Polonius in Hamlet, in which he describes how to present himself politically in court. And I based my media studies presentation to my students on that. But it was a very long time later, and I won't go into that because otherwise we'll spend the whole hour going into it. But your listeners could certainly look at the website, jailingopinions.com, not my own, but it was started by someone who liked my film, my telling film, Jailing Opinion, so much that he started a website to promote it. And there you will find how my awakening to Jewish tyranny happened, and it had nothing to do with other than, again, Shakespeare. So rather than tell you what you can find out by looking at that, I would really like to progress our conversation into talking about what is happening today and how that awakening and my own expertise in advertising helped me to see how relevant, how absolutely relevant, most relevant it is, how advertising and packaging and what I call swindle speak is very much connected to how we have been gradually swindled.
Now, you say that you were in international advertising. When did you start that, like the 1990s or around 2000? How long have you been in international advertising?
Well, since I was 15.
Oh, my
goodness. since before I left Australia. So, and I've done any number of television commercials. You can also see a list of those, from Japan to Germany to all sorts of, to advertise coffee, cars, beauty products, the gamut, really. But it was that experience which showed me how it is possible to present ideas and to sell something which is, pardon me, which is not not strictly what is being advertised. You are selling most of the time a dream, if you want to put it in positive terms. And of course, it's buyer beware, really, with advertising, as it is in politics. It's buyer beware. And so it sort of brings me to perhaps the present day, if I can mention to you what happened, what has transpired in the Guardian newspaper this February, where they are talking about something called Think Different, Can Advertising Defeat Alt-Right Propaganda? And this is where my unusual expertise is very, very relevant to politics. And it's proven by the fact that it talks about the Saatchi brothers. Actually, I know the Saatchi brothers, Charles and Maurice Saatchi, who are the sort of top dogs, as you might say, of the advertising field. Mm. And I would like to read, if I may, to our listeners, some of the highlights of that report in The Guardian, because it's very telling. And it says, the government here is giving advertising top dogs, they're calling that the Saatchi brothers, a budget of $60 million to fund a project to combat, quote, the increasingly widespread influence and propaganda of the so-called alt-right. These are the sort of internet alternative right. Going on to quote him, the Guardian, in the light of the widespread of far-right bigotry and misinformation, Theresa May, our Prime Minister in Britain's government, has launched a campaign to fight back. As part of a $60 million government project, the advertising group M&C Saatchi, as I say, I know them personally, will be tasked with combating the increasingly widespread influence and propaganda of the so-called alt-right. The Home Office put out a statement on the day the new campaign was reported, quote, this government is determined to challenge extremism.
Okay, Lady Miss Renew, we're going in for a break. Hang on. Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware on a very challenged technical day. Joining me from London, Lady Michelle Renouf. She is again, I got to get your bio in front of me, is again, she is really, you're known, Lady Michelle Renouf, as a revisionist, though. That's why I think you were sent to me. You're revisionist.
Well, I can't be a revisionist because it's illegal and I would be arrested and imprisoned. You see, that actually is a good reason for interviewing me, because it's quite shocking, especially for American and Canadian viewers, listeners, to realize that to call me a revisionist would be to put me at risk.
Are you
what I am?
Are you a citizen of the UK, or where is your domicile?
I am a citizen of the UK, but I travel a lot to Germany, and I travel a lot to France, where it is illegal.
Yeah, there it is.
To be a revisionist. But in any case, what I am interested in primarily is the right of the revisionists to speak and debate, and our right to hear them. That is, as an educator, that is far more important to me than just about anything else, because without that freedom, we are enslaved to a tyranny for which we, of course, are not permitted to name.
So, the UK, the UK has lately, you're talking about this 60 pound sterling budget for
60 million.
I mean, yes,
60 million
pounds sterling to fight "quote unquote" the alt-right, which, and you know, this is coming. Do we call you Lady Michelle, Lady Renew? What's your title?
Yeah, either is fine. Either is fine.
Okay, Lady Michelle is easier for me, I think. So, isn't it a case where in the UK right now, obviously your country, like much of Europe, has a huge demographic problem that's been imported by largely Jewish politicians, let's be honest. That,
well, yes, admit it. They admit it, don't they? They admit it. Barbara Spector absolutely makes it very clear, as your listeners may well know, when she spoke to an Israeli newspaper and said, "We Jews are at the fore. We are leading in this." it's out of the horse's mouth.
Okay, so basically what's going on in the UK, as I understand it, London has adopted a recent, I don't know what they call it, a referendum. It's not really a referendum, but some type of statement that defines what is quote-unquote anti-Semitism. The UK said they were going to pick it up. And what it really seems to do is try to institutionalize history in favor of a Jewish narrative that then cuts us off from discussing anything historically within even the UK.
Yeah. Well, you might like to know, and it's very little appreciated and understood, actually, but we had an enormous legal victory in 2008. And it began, actually, with the Australian academic Dr. Frederick Tobin. I think your listeners may be aware.
You know, he was actually one of the first guests on my show. I should probably bring him back after like 6 years.
He's a chum of mine, yeah. So how it happened was that he was arrested whilst in transit at Heathrow Airport in London. He wasn't coming into England. And I got a call from my chum, David Duke, and he alerted me to what was happening to Tobin. And so I rang to the authorities to get in contact with Tobin, because 1 year before that, in relation to David Irving's trial and release from prison in Vienna in 2006 or so, well, actually he was in prison in 2006, he was released in 2007, I had gone to Vienna to interview with my Telling Films that I began when I went onto the other side of the camera years later, after my advertising career in television. I went to Dr. Herbert Schaller, who got a David Irving out of prison in Vienna in 2007, and I got him to give me an interview in which he had described how a law had been raised and passed to prevent Dr. Schaller from taking on any more legal cases because of his success in getting Irving out of prison. And the idea was that the law stopped anyone over 70 from taking on cases. But by this time, Dr. Schaller was already aged 85. So clearly it was intended to stop any successful defense of revisionists. And he showed me how he had achieved this. And this was in no way related to the Tobin case, which came a year later, but it was because Dr. Schaller had shown me how it was possible, because of the vagueness of these laws. For instance, it is illegal in Austria, for instance, to query what is the so-called unique mass murder weapon called the homicidal gas chamber for mass murdering people. You may not ask how it works scientifically. It is against the law. And the laws are kept so vague that you cannot challenge them or pin them down. As they say, it's like pinning jelly to a wall. So it was because he had shown me how this was done that I thought, well, if Frederick Tobin had been reported in the newspaper to have said to the judge in the first instance, once he had been arrested, that, quote, because he's a philosopher, he had said, well, the whole world is my prison, end quote. And he had, as a philosopher, decided to assume that all was defeated and that he would take a sort of moral stance, as he had done in the past in court cases in Australia. And knowing that moral argument cuts no ice whatever in a court of law, I asked him if he would like me to assemble and mobilize a defense for him. And my defense would have been based on what I had learned from Dr. Schaller, though Dr. Schaller had nothing directly to do with it. Dr. Tobin agreed, and I mobilized a defense team, and that team won. And what it won against was the backdoor idea of English law harmonizing, to quote them, harmonizing with German law, the German Holocaust denial law, which meant that we would not adopt in Britain a Holocaust denial law because the Jews wanted to continue saying that we had free speech in Britain. But in fact, it would have been a way, if they had managed to extradite Dr. Tobin to Mannheim prison in Germany, it would have meant a legal precedent by which others could then be sent off, extradited and sent off to German prison without further inquiry into their case. It would be simply rubber stamped because of the legal precedent, and they would have sent. And so I say that it was a very, very good example of the Max Nordau ladder speech. Max Nordau was the one of the founding Jewish Zionists, world Zionists, who had, after the second or third, without my notes sitting in front of me, he in 1903, whichever was the second or third World Zionist Congress, he had said apropos of it that we Jews operate as per a ladder. We know the rungs of the steps in which we are going to make toward our goal, but those steps are not made very clear to others, and neither is the goal. And so I learned both from that, because I had been doing postgraduate studies for an MA, a Master of Arts at London University. It was at Heathrow College, which is part of the University of London. I had actually been studying all of these things at that time, and I applied that idea in my mind to what was going on with this Tobin case, because I saw it as a rung of a ladder that intended really to capture the British revisionist Bishop Richard Williamson, and that would have meant capturing the Vatican. So it was a gradual, unseen step, legal step, toward actually putting him eventually in the next year into prison in Mannheim. Mm. And therefore, it would have stopped his particular traditional Catholics, the SXPX, the Society for St. Pius X, who had, since 1976, I think it was, or the late 70s, the Archbishop Lefebvre had opposed the Vatican II conference, the Congress, and its joining up, hyphenating Christianity with Judaism, i.e., it had taken away the supremacism of Judaism and made it subordinate to Judaism, which it is now at the Vatican. And this group, founded by Archbishop Lefebvre, who is now deceased, he had, as your listeners may know, he had ordained four bishops, Bishop Williamson being one of them. And he was a foremost exponent of Lefebvre's opposition to Vatican II. And of course, Jewry wished to completely discredit this opposition so that all of Christendom, particularly the Roman Catholic Christendom of a billion faithful, would actually agree for Christendom to be subordinated to Judaism. And of course, this is actually what has happened and why they wanted to imprison Bishop Williamson. And later on, of course, they found another way of doing it. But that was a legal victory from our point of view in England, because we did not harmonize with German law, and therefore neither Dr. Tobin nor Bishop Williamson wound up in Mannheim prison. And it is an example of how things are done differently in England as they are in other countries, because what I call our Judaic predator has ways and means, like in advertising, of adapting the selling of an idea to the particular group of people that you are aiming it to. And it really is not genius. It is simply predatory devices. And this is what I am very keen to expose.
Of course, then I guess now you're getting into control of mainstream, or what we call Jewish media. Obviously, they need these assets then to sell these ideas to the general public, do they not?
They certainly do. And we are very, very susceptible to them, because, as your listeners may well know also, that the cousin of Sigmund Freud, the psychoanalyst, Bernays, instigated a great deal of inquiry, psychological testing inquiry in the 1920s and 30s into how we as humans are very subject to our emotions. In fact, I believe, had we learnt a little bit more of the better part of Christianity, which for me is its Buddhism, the idea of being able to separate our subjectivity, our emotions, from our objectivity, our way of putting something, say, ourselves on a chair and examining ourselves objectively, rather than what is now encouraged in a pathetic manner. I think you'll perhaps agree that we are now being persuaded to be so sensitive that we can't bear the slightest criticism. We have to run like children in a playground to their daddy or their teacher or something the moment anybody says anything, pathetically. And we are, instead of going toward the better part of Christianity, which was for me this ability to look at something objectively and take your own self, your own ego out of it, now we are encouraged to have only our ego and no objectivity. And of course, it plays very well into the guidelines for teaching about the Holocaust. And that is one of my key concerns to try to make clear in my telling films, that on page 11 of the international guidelines for teaching about the Holocaust in all of our schools worldwide, it actually states, and I'm quoting it from the back of my Jailing Opinions DVD, as I quoted to the French judge last June in Professor Forreston's trial in Paris, where I was Professor Forreston's sole defense witness, because we both had spoken at the Tehran conference 2006, and they're trying to put him in prison for this. I quoted to the French judge that, quote, care must be taken not to give a platform for deniers or seek to disprove the denier's position through normal historical debate and rational argument, end quote. So we are not, this is why as an educationalist, I am very concerned with this, because that is the way you teach a religion. You do not teach history. History should, as opposed to bring, it should accord with the facts. And that is what revisionism is. It's not an ideology, as Professor Forreston says. It is a method. Revisionism happens about everything. When new facts come to light, new discoveries are made, new scientific investigations is possible through radar of the ground or DNA and all these things change what we thought was what we knew about history. And this changes all of the time. But there's one area of history where this is totally taboo. And one has to say, why? And that is why Telling Films aims to do.
I'll tell you what, we lost a lot of time with you. Can you stay over another half hour?
Oh, I'm certainly, I could stay over all night, actually.
Okay, great, because I know you've been like requested probably 30, 40 times on this show, and I finally reached out to you. So you have a huge, huge fan base within this audience. So I'm sure a lot of people would love to hear from you. And since we had those technical issues, we're just starting to get into a groove here. Now, we both agree. Now, we agree that the history, all history must go through some revisionism. It always has. That Jewish elites refuse to allow most of the Western world to look into this. We don't have this problem in the United States. We can still do it. In other words, you can still technically do it in the UK.
Yeah, but you lose your job. You lose your reputation. that's what happens in England, too.
Yeah,
you can
does.
Do it.
However, we believe times are changing. I think, you know, in other words, we've been fighting the good battle for so long. We believe times are changing. And we just keep.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah, we just have to hammer. We only have like really about 3 minutes to go. So why don't you just explain a little bit about your website, your film enterprise, how people can get to it, and then we'll come back and get started at the start of the next hour. So I'll give you like 2 minutes left, I think, to talk about your film work.
Thank you. Well, the jailingopinions.com is not actually my website. But it was started by someone who are we still together?
Yeah, we're.
Yes. Yes. It was started by someone who's actually my webmaster now. And on that website, you will see quite a bit about me in particular. But my own website is called jewishrepublic.com. And that is my campaign website, jewishrepublic.com. Because there you will see that there's a morale rejuvenation column in which I only put positive actions. I'm only interested in positive actions. I'm not interested in what our predator is doing so much as what we are going to do about it. And there I put, I don't always agree with everything that I don't agree with anybody 100%, and I don't recommend anybody does. We should always be critical. But there I put positive actions. So you will see my heroes, in a sense, even though they may not be in other aspects. And the campaign website basically is to show people that there is an alternative to the occupation of Jewish predatory behavior of Palestine, whereby we are duped into a terrible religion, a terrible fear of the Jew. And I believe that if they were to go to their first homeland option, the peaceful option that has been available to them since 1928 on the southeast border of Russia, in an area the size of Switzerland and named after its capital, Birobidzhan, we would not have this thraldom of the Jewish ideas over us than we do now, because they occupy what is called the promised land and so on. Even though it was occupied by secular Jews like Theodor Herzl, nevertheless, the accomplishment of this criminal state is to me preventing us from freedom of thought.
And Lady Michelle Renouf is going to stay over for the next hour, everybody, and we'll get rolling here. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Coming to you live from Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. Joining me from London, Lady Michelle Renouf from JewishRepublic.com, noted in the historical field. I won't say the word R. Lady Michelle, welcome back.
advertising. Thank you. Advertising. The
advertising world. Okay, I got a question. First of all, we are live. We have a very, very large audience live. Just out of curiosity, what's the weather like in London?
It's as usual.
Which is?
Slightly damp. Slightly damp.
Damp, huh? And it's cold, damp, but
yes,
not...
Yes, yes. Sometimes the sun peeps through.
Okay, well, I wouldn't invite anybody to Riyadh, quite frankly, unless you had business. but it's been overcast today here also. It's been very kind of cool here. It's only about 64 degrees Fahrenheit for those on the Fahrenheit scale. Have you received a lot of harassment from the Jewish community over the past year and a half?
Yes, I have actually, and it was actually my webmaster who was able to find out who was the source of the incitement to kill me. Actually, someone had sent out messages to say send Renouf ricin, the poison, in a get well card. Ricin became quite famous when it was put on the tip of an umbrella some time ago, and a Bulgarian was I don't know if you know the quite a famous story, but a person was murdered by a tip of an umbrella being touched with loaded with ricin. So, of course, it is an incitement to murder. So he tried to find out who was responsible. He did find out it was actually an ex-Israeli settler, as they like to call these pirates, these people who invade other people's countries criminally, who was living in Canada. So he approached Scotland Yard here and the Royal Mounties in Canada to report of the case. But both considered it not a threat and not important. But I would have thought that if I, for instance, mm-hmm. were to suggest ricin be sent in a get-well card to anybody of the precious variety, I'm quite sure that you would never hear from me again. So there is a law for the rest of the world and a law for the specially revered people. Mm-hmm. And those specially revered people, they are revered for their self-promoted superiority, their entitlement, and their exceptionalism, which I deeply oppose. And I also would like to say on record that I am not an anti-Semite, because I regard that as a propaganda term intending to give a genetic idea and a race idea to something that is actually a creed. I am very anti-Jewish, clearly.
Yes,
very anti-Jewish.
Exactly. Anti-Jewish, because, clear. You'll
yes,
find a
woman. And I'm very clear about it because I have studied the psychology of religion at university, as I was mentioning, and I have good reason to understand from their scriptures why they are anti-Gentile and why we should regard them as therefore as predatory. And just to give you one brief example, if you look at the book of Isaiah, it states very clearly that we Hebrews will enrich ourselves and boast of ourselves in the Gentile nations, end quote. This is a predatory mission. And one has to ask why these things happen to these people to easily find out the answer. Of course, I'm not very popular for wanting to say that. But as I say earlier, with the JewishRepublic.com, there is a place, a homeland for Jews on the southeast border in Russia, where Jews have lived peacefully since 1928, except for those who were lured to build up the demographics in Israel since 1946. Nevertheless, there is a place. And as I say, you keep the foxes out of the chicken coop, but you don't have to kill the foxes. You just have to make people aware of what the fox is. And in this case, it is quite clear by their own scriptural and law accounts that the Judaists are anti-Gentile by their own definition and predatory. So I will only trust someone like Gilad Atzmon, who will describe himself, he's Israeli born, but he will describe himself as an ex-Jew. I think it is possible to be an ex-Jew, because I say you don't have to be Jewish to be Jew-ish. I would say the present Pope, Obama, Merkel, Cameron, etc., etc. These people are what I would call Jew-ish. They are not necessarily Hebrew, but they adhere to the Judaic principle of greed and vanity as their main...
We call them rectified goys on this. We take the Noah Heath and just call them rectified goys directly from the teachings of Ginsburg and Inner.org in Israel, you know, with the Chabad movement, because that's what they call them. So, okay, we just call them rectified. But, yeah, we agree with you. They are Jew-ish or rectified goys, but they serve Jewish interests. They have Jewish mentalities. What is the, since you're in Europe traveling about, what is the mood right now in Europe relative to the immigration issues, nationalism? What's going on inside of Europe based on your view?
Well, just today, or the 24th of February at least, we have news, good news from Denmark. And I'll just read you the report if I may, because it's such good news.
Is this Geert Wilders or no? I'm just curious. I know you're going to say, but I'm guessing. Is this Geert Wilders? I heard, is he in Denmark also?
No. I would never quote anything from Geert Wilders. No, he's totally pro-Israel and totally be distrusted. Absolutely not. He's a false flag operator like that other ghastly person. What is his name? That Norwegian mass murderer who gives you that fey Hitler salute. I've never seen a queer Hitler salute that's got a limp wrist. And he poses as a Nazi.
Go ahead,
So, to quote this report, Danish Parliament opposes ethnic cleansing of Europeans after Danes become minority in their own towns. Of course, we can see that in our schools here in London. That was just an aside. Coming back to the report, history was made this week when the Danish Parliament officially adopted a motion opposing the ethnic cleansing of white European people by third world immigration and calling on that country's government to take urgent steps to prevent white Danish people from becoming a minority. The groundbreaking motion, which was fiercely opposed by the openly communist parties and the crypto-communist socialist parties in the parliament, was passed on February the 15th. Titled, quote, about the number of residents in Bromby. I'm not sure you might pronounce that differently with the cross through the O, Strand, a place with immigrants' backgrounds. The motion reads as follows. Parliament notes with concern that today there are areas in Denmark where the proportion of immigrants and descendants from non-Western countries is over 50%. It is the belief of the Parliament that Danes should not be in the minority in neighbourhoods in Denmark. The government and Parliament have implemented a number of austerity measures that have limited asylum flows significantly and which prevents parallel societies. Parliament calls on the government to proceed with a political objective to reduce the number of asylum seekers and the number of family reunifications coming to Denmark. The motion was adopted by 55 votes to 54 in the 170-seat parliament. Well, not to sort of go on necessarily to tell you which of these people did so, just to conclude the last part of the report, it is still not clear exactly how the new motion can be implemented by the Danish government, but the mere fact But the mere fact that a European Parliament has officially finally taken notice of the ethnic cleansing of the white people by third world immigration is a breakthrough in itself. And that is the most positive news I've heard.
Yeah, I saw that. But, you know, I live in Saudi. I see how the Saudis do it. You know, they want to keep and preserve their culture. I see what the Jordanians do. They're ruthless in a humane way. They actually are humane, but they're ruthless. Within 2 months, they rounded up 420,000 Ethiopians and were flying 747s nonstop to get them out of here. And that's something that, in other words, this type of intensity is what we need to see in the West, just to talk. If you talk for 5 years, you're going to have a problem that's five times worse than it is today. And that's what worries me about the politicians in the West. They're just not taking action. They're just talking.
Well, they're not. But these people are. Normally, they're not. That's why it's so surprising.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see it. I have to agree.
Yeah, well, it's a good indication. And I think it's a good indication that couples with the Brexit of Britain getting out of the clutches of the European Union, the vote for Trump as a poker player, we know that like Putin, but whether he proves to be beneficial to the world or not, he has shown the public. He has allowed us to see that the public wants something different to the lies that they've been told that they have a democracy when, in fact, they don't have. All their parties, like ours, are all pro-Zionist. And whilst he may seem pro-Zionist, nevertheless, he has made comments that indicate that he thinks it should be America first, not Zionism first. And we'll have to see how that plays out.
I have almost, I can see you and I are basically on the exact same wavelengths in how we're presenting information. How about the AfD in Germany? What's going on with the Germans since you're back in?
Well, you know, the AfD, I mean, whether they're a controlled opposition group or not, it's the same as UKIP. You know, Nigel Farage for me is a tremendous hero because he was able to show by getting 4 million people in Britain to understand what was going on, he was then able to get Brexit to occur. Now, the AfD in Germany, they say many, many good things, but like Nigel Farage, they cannot say everything, otherwise they will just be slammed shut. So I think the same with Trump.
Yeah.
It will depend upon what they can achieve. But meantime, they are showing the public at large that others feel the same. And this is the most important thing that we can do against our predator. We can help people over the fear barrier. For fear of the Jews has been for two millennia. A lot of it's been self-promoted. And secondly, the inertia barrier, where people will say to you, I've heard them say in Germany, oh, I know what you're talking about. It's too late. They say the same in England. It's too late. We can do nothing. Well, Brexit has shown that we can. And I think indirectly, Merkel has shown that the Germans can, because like so many people who like to impress the Jews. Now, whether she's half Jewish or not doesn't matter to me. She's certainly Jew-ish. And she has overstepped the mark like many who try to please their masters by telling the German public that hundreds of millions of colored people will come to live in Germany. Now, the Germans, given their sort of foolish blame of world history, of the white people, etc., accept that it would be nice to have a few million helped, even though they're no longer refugees when they've come all the way through perfectly peaceful countries that could take them in as refugees. They've come all the way to Germany and Europe. Therefore, they are economic migrants. They're no longer refugees. However, the German people would have been prepared and have been prepared to take in all of these colored economic migrants, but not when Merkel clearly states the full intention. And this is sometimes when people try to please their Jewish masters that they reveal the hand that they were not meant to. And I always like to remind people of how when Brown, when it was prime minister in Britain, where he was speaking at the Knesset, and to impress the Jews and to schmooze them, he said, quote, "The Jews have the greatest global reach," end quote. Well, we are supposed to understand and fear that, but we are not supposed to state it so clearly. And it's when these wannabe Jews or Jewish schmoozers want to please the Jews that they actually tell us and warn us inadvertently against what is the actual program. And so I think that both Merkel and the ADA, the Alternative for Germany, are doing a very good job. the former inadvertently, the second maybe controlled opposition, but certainly to the extent that they're doing it, they're succeeding. They are getting people to mobilize and get over the two principal problems, which is the fear barrier and the sense of we could do nothing. Pardon me. So I think that the Alternative for Germany is doing a good job. We can only hope that more people will start being brave. Even though we know that the two world wars intentionally killed off our best and our bravest on both sides, still there are remnants there, and we do see lots of those people cropping up. Usually they're revisionists, but there are other people out there. And the one thing that our predator has to do is, as I say, our predator knows each and every one of us because it pays him to do so, because he can write up for Dr. Porat in her Anti-Semitism Worldwide campaign from Tel Aviv how many anti-Semites there are in the world. And so they can drum up our activities far beyond anything that we have actually achieved. But what they must keep doing is to stop us from seeing how large we ourselves are, that we are not small. Nope. We are not the minority.
We are not the
minority. We are that massive. And it's getting us together. And that is why I particularly admire Jez Turner, who is running the London Forum, and it's now spreading around the UK, because he is getting Europeans, leaders, and others from all parts of the world to come and speak and let us hear that there are other people around the world, and that we are massive, really, if only we knew it. And that will help recruit people, because people don't want to join something that is weak. Why would they want to destroy their careers and their reputations, as we know they do, our predator does, if in fact it's just going to be a sacrifice, as a sort of suicide sacrifice? But if they feel that they are joining, as they did, for instance, when they joined Nigel Farage's Brexit vote, they felt they were joining a lot of people. And indeed they did. And it's this confidence they have in joining something large, not something weak and small, that will gradually get us to defeat our anti-Gentile predator. And as I say, we don't have to kill the foxes, but we do, and there's a safe place for them to go. Yeah, but we do have to warn our people.
Yeah, I want to keep you over a little bit longer, actually, because I want to talk more about that, but we... Just what can I say? You have a lot to say. The war now, when you talk about this predatory, you and I are on the exact same page. This audience is on the same page. You have something that you call swindle speak. We love words mm-hmm. here. We're very big on how to use words, how to structure words, how to use them
oh, yes.
for your benefit. Inside America right now, what we see is a big war against one of the biggest assets of this predatory force, as you like to call them, Jewish power projection, and that is their media. We have a big war now in America. Even Trump, he's doubling down. These are the enemy of the American people. He's not saying it's the Jewish press. He's calling it the fake news, but they're outing themselves at the end of the day. Do you have anything like this starting to bubble up inside of the UK? I know the last press conference, I think the BBC was actually banned for being basically not even a legitimate news source. Do you have anything like this happening in the UK?
Well, I can give you a very interesting little article here, which is the basis of many things of interest relating to this. And that is, just recently, the BBC put out this story. It's called The Corpse Factory and the Birth of Fake News. And it's written by a Dr. David Clark from Sheffield Hallam University. And and I'll just quote what the BBC says. Fake news, false stories that masquerade as real news is not new. In the spring of 1917, some of Britain's most influential newspapers published a gruesome story that has been called the Master Hoax. And I think we finally have found proof about where it came from. Now, he's talking about there was an extracting of glycerin, so-called, out of dead soldiers. Now, this story, just going to the end of the story, because otherwise we'll never get to speak of so many things that we need to cover in our hour. At the end of that story, it's saying, in 1917, MI-17, that's one of the England's secret investigative companies, employed 13 officers and 25 paid writers, some of whom moonlighted as special correspondents for national newspapers. One of their most talented agents was Major Hugh Pollard, who combined his work in the propaganda department with the role of special correspondent for the Daily Express. After the war, Pollard confessed his role in spreading the Corpse Factory lie to his cousin, Ivor Montagu. You'll note the names. Writing in 1970, Montagu recalled, quote, "We laughed at his cleverness when he told us about how his department had launched the account of the German corpse factories and of how the Hun was using the myriads of trench war casualties for making soap and margarine," end quote. Of course, just an aside would be to say it could only have been a Jewish invention, for what German during the 30s and 40s would want to wash themselves in Jewish fat soap. So, however, the article concludes here by saying, but lies have consequences. During the 1930s, the Corpse Factory lie was used by the Nazis as proof of British lies during the Great War. And of course, it comes to its conclusion. This article by saying historians remind us that these false news, quote, encourage later disbelief when early reports circulated about the Holocaust under Hitler, end quote. Of course, so it's not not going to tell us precisely what I am implying there. But it's certainly showing that there are movements out there that are exposing bit by bit the what are called sibs, the whispers of propaganda that in fact are proving, as this story is, that those sibs, those whispers actually came from Britain, from the propagandists the underground propagandists in Britain that were then used as part of the Holocaust story. So it is, there's a lot of interesting things cropping up, and probably why the British government have been so keen, just coming back to that £60 million that they are going to give to the Saatchi brothers, the advertising group here, tasked with combating the increase of this information. Just going back to reading, actually, the this article that was in The Guardian, it explains about why I, you know, this is why I coin phrases like swindle speak, because we need to have our own terms and not use the predators' terms for describing things. So it's because of my advertising field that I understand the power of words and packaging and advertising. It is enormously influential. In ways that people do partly understand, but really are not quite seeing how this thing is so politically potent, not just for selling products. And certainly the Saatchi brothers are past masters at taking complex political ideas and boiling them down to concise messages. So to quote from this article in The Guardian, the agency, the Saatchi agency, is reticent about discussing the details of its government brief. Of course it would be. It says its role is not to deliver a national ad campaign, but rather to support the work of civic groups around the country that are already working in communities to steer people away from extremist ideas. Okay, so this is undercover work.
Well,
as it,
you know,
it is.
I'm hearing this, and I'm boiling, because when you say all of these buzzwords that directly link themselves back to the Jewish community, the bigotry is a big one. Civics groups is another one. These are all terms that are just code words.
Yeah.
Give us Jews more money so we can just continue to pursue our goals.
And these communities, who are these communities?
Exactly.
What is the other word for community?
What other community out there is fighting, quote-unquote, anti-Semitism and the alt-right, but the Jewish community? Why don't you just come out? This is what frustrates me. Why don't they just come out and say, hey, look, we want to take £60 million from you guys because we're Jews and we just want to fight against you, the hosts.
Well, eventually they will, I think. Eventually they're gearing up to it. They're getting more and more bold and in telling us what they're doing. And I believe that that is why many Jews who were anti-Zionism in the beginning, from the beginning, and anti the establishment of a Jewish state, is because they were the smarter ones who know that the main tenet of the Talmud, the law books by which these people run their campaign, is never to show your hand to the Gentiles.
Yes. Lady Michelle, we got a half hour if you want to stay over.
Yes, by all means.
Great. Lady Michelle, everybody, she's staying for one more half hour. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye, intelligent media, politically aware. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Joining me again from London, Lady Michelle Renouf. She's a former advertising, I don't know if we can call you an executive, but also a director. And it looks like the film title is Telling Films. Is that your production company, Ms.?
That's it. Tellingfilms.com is my my website, my output of trying to explain to people what is happening in our world, as in the same way that you are. So just quickly, because we haven't got much time, and I would like to sort of mention, do a few new things that are happening, because I think your listeners are probably, so now I'm speaking to you for the first time. I see that we are interested in very much the same angle on things. Just with referring to why don't you just come out and say it? And of course, more and more gradually they are.
Yeah. Well, by the way, before you go, we were making the comment in the chat room, and you can join us in the chat room. InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat. It's buzzing. Somebody mentioned in the chat room, Basically, these Jewish supremacists are getting so bold now they can hardly hold back because they believe their New World Order is going to be a fait accompli.
Yes, they certainly do. I mean, it was in 1962, Look magazine invited the founder of the Jewish state, David Ben-Gurion, to picture the world 25 years into the future. And he's already talking about how there's going to be a Supreme Court of mankind in Jerusalem and why they have to have Jerusalem as the biggest, as I would describe it, the biggest advertising logo on the planet and why they have to. And as I say, if they were removed to their
Hi, we have a caller. We have live shows calling in. Joining us, so we're going to take a call here. Lady Renu, Lady Michelle, from the 250 area code. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live with Lady Renu.
Hi there, Dennis. It's Barbara calling.
Hi,
Snippets.
Yes,
it's Snippets calling. Hello.
Yes, hi. Somebody's got their radio on. Maybe that's you, Snips.
I'm just trying to turn it off because I just realized because we're on totally different. You know, like
yeah, you're 45-second delay over the internet.
There we go. There
okay,
it's finished.
Hi. Anyways,
so now I can hear nothing.
Yeah, go ahead. You're live with Lady Michelle Renouf.
Hi there, Milady Michelle. How are you?
Yes, very well,
don't think you will remember you, but I remember you from speaking at the Waddling Dog in Victoria, B.C.
Oh, for heaven's sake. That marvelous Paul Farmer.
It was about 2 years ago.
That's right. Yes, we did a talk tour across Canada.
And
marvelous Paul Fromm, an excellent man.
Oh, yes. And I just realized, as I heard you speak, I owe you copies of the speech that you gave because I taped it. And I remember you mentioned something about wanting a copy for your library, and somehow it just slipped my mind, and I've still got them, so I shall send them to you later today.
Well, that's very kind, because it's always important to keep a copy of what one says ad lib, mm-hmm. because our enemies mm-hmm. are apt to miss, and they certainly would like to silence me, so it's always very important to know precisely what I did say. Thank you very
much. Well, I do know that the better somebody is, the more they want to silence you.
Well,
mm-hmm.
generally,
if somebody, generally when we hear something bad about someone, it's worth looking into because they may be trying to tell you something
always.
That, yes.
I don't quite so far as to say the enemy of my, you know, the enemy of my, you know, somebody makes them, you know, there's a way of that works, but, you know, you really can judge somebody by the enemies that they have. And on that note, I just wanted to say thank you for hosting this show, Dennis, and having this lovely lady on.
Well, thank you.
It's breaking up so badly here on the phone. I can't carry on really
but
a conversation
other
than just.
You're coming through fine, so it'll be recorded.
Here? Very nice to hear from you. Thank you very much. It was very
thank
sweet
you,
to hear
and
from you.
Thank you, and I will go back into, I will go and see where I can send you copies of that particular, I think it boiled down to 3 pieces, so I'll send them all to you.
Oh, that's kind. Well,
there you
from,
are in your little dirndl.
Happy to hear from.
Okay, thank
thanks.
You.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
Thank you, Dennis. Love
all
you guys.
Right. That's Snips in the chat room, everybody. Famous Snippets, she calls herself. She's from snippetsandsnappets.blogspot.com. Very big website that covers Jewish issues, Palestinian issues. I see that are you really interested in the Palestinian issue, or is this something that's a side business for you?
No, I'm very interested in it because I had a Palestinian friend who explained to me when I went there to Palestine with him in exactly what goes on there. And because later on, I came across a British serviceman who'd served in Palestine 45 to 48, who told me a very different story to the Paul Newman Hollywood version of the Exodus, that I became really very interested in the Palestinians because I believe that they are standing at the front line of historical truth and international justice for all of us. I don't know how those people can bear, for 100 years now they have stood against these predators, and the rest of the world have allowed it. I just can't understand how they can possibly maintain any sanity given the enormous cruelty that's involved in our not being able to help deal with these with what's going on for those people. And as they say, they fight at the front line for all of us. So I have a great respect for the Palestinians. And I learned from the British servicemen who were there with them that they are a peace-loving people. They are politically innocent, and they are simply defending their own right to exist. So I have enormous respect for the Palestinians. And actually, it was 1 month before the murder of Colonel Gaddafi that I was in Libya, and he had intended to send me his private plane 1 month later, which tragically, the 1 month later was when they murdered him, because he was going to help me try to contact those nations that were constituting the United Nations, even though we know that the United Nations, like the League of Nations before, is a Jewish initiative. Nevertheless, it's possible for the nations of the world to propose a resolution that cannot be deemed anti-Semitic or neo-Nazi or any of the other smear words. It is simply to say that there is a first Jewish homeland option that's been peaceful since 1928, and there is no need for the criminalized state of the Jewish state of Israel. And because not only would it give correct international justice for the Palestinians and relieve them of having to fight at the front line for all of us when they have no weapons of any description, not even the media, let alone actual weapons. But this would remove from the Jewish advertising elite, which is what Judaism is, the mystique that they have achieved the promised land and all of these fantasies that the Christian Zionists believe they have, because they are simply there. They promote themselves as innocent violin players. That is why the Canadian girl, Monica Schaefer, recently, as your caller will be, our caller just came in recently, would be interested in her and should take a big interest in this lady, Monica Schaefer, because she has played a violin and talks about how she apologizes to her mother for believing in the Holocaust. Well, it's not that aspect that I'm talking about. It's the fact that she has stolen the image of the Jew as the innocent violin player. So it's the idea that these people could not have accomplished taking hold of the promised land since they are so innocent. It has to have been that God gave it to them. And this mystique that is causing people to be in awe of Jewishness is what I am trying to expose as sheer advertising. It is not any gift that these or any genius that these people have. It is simply what swindle speak and twist speak and all of these things that by gradualness, as Israel Shamir, a chum of mine who's an ex-Jew, he describes the Jewish process of what he calls gradualness, how, like they explained the frog in boiling water, that if you put a frog in boiling water, he'll jump out immediately. But if you put him in warm water and gradually bring the heat up, he will get used to the heat and not notice when he should spring out because there's danger. And Shamir is a very interesting man, actually. He wrote an article at the time when Irving had been imprisoned in Austria in 2006. And he says, and I'm quoting from his piece here, Some months ago, I was brought to the police station in Jaffa, this is in Palestine, and asked to answer the complaint of the French Jewish organization, LICRA, LICRA. These are the people who are trying to imprison Robert Faurisson in France. And Israel Shamir goes on to say, the policeman said, "Do you write about Jewish supremacy and world domination?" And Israel Shamir replied, "So what if I do? Every second rabbi expresses his view." So the police said, "Yes, but they see it in a positive light." So Shamir goes on to say, "Thus there is no argument about the fact of Jewish supremacy, only about its assessment. If you think it is good, you may even become a U.S. president, which of course we know. If you think it is bad, your place is in prison." So I've just ended a quote there. But here is Shamir telling us how the advertising campaign is conducted gradually so that we don't notice. And this is part of the predatory process, because if you're a predator, naturally, you are not going to be interested in honesty. That would be crazy. So you're not going to tell the honest truth unless, of course, you're living in Israel like Netanyahu, and you're so surrounded by your own lies and your own fantasy world that you believe the rest of the world is also convinced, that you tend to say things, frankly, that the diaspora, especially in America, would not wish you to say, because they can see that others are not entirely agreeing with a Jewish supremacism, and that the headquarters should be of the law, international law, should be centered in Jerusalem under their control.
Yeah, under their Noahide. I've met Israel Shamir. He came to my office in Amman. Yes. I live in Amman. So I had dinner with Israel. I did get to meet at least one of the guys, you know. That was kind of cool.
Yes.
Yeah, that was.
Yes, he's a good, amusing man, isn't he? He was a good friend of the late, great Joe Sobran in America. Americans will know that chap. And that's how I met him, via Joe Sobran. But if I just, because we probably haven't got a lot to go now in our minutes.
Yeah, 10 to 9 minutes.
And I wanted to mention to you about the this 10 world-class teams compete to design the new National Holocaust Museum next to our Parliament. Right next. So that instead of going into Westminster Cathedral or as the sort of Christian basis of our culture, whereby you can swear on a Christian oath that you're going to tell the truth, but a Jew cannot swear on any sort of oath, because, as we know, he has the Kol Nidre prayer that he recites every Yom Kippur, where his oaths and vows he can dispel for the following year. This is something that Christians need to understand and must realize, therefore, that you cannot make any oaths or vows with a Judaist. So, but now people will be going into the Holocaust Museum when it's built and will be worshipping this sort of secular fantasy of these people.
Yeah, this is like a permanent menorah stationed right next to your Parliament building.
That's absolutely repellent as an idea, because it is simply opposing what I would call. Yes, well, it is, because, you know, I do believe in the Hellenic four inseparable virtues, but this is the basis of our real educational system and our laws. I could just remind you that your listeners that the four are to do with, the first is wisdom, but with a scientific attitude. As in the Hellenic tradition. The second is non-bias, which, of course, we see constantly tremendous bias because of the monopoly of Jewish control in many sectors, which they themselves boast and brag about.
But you can't say it because it's anti-Semitic.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't mind what I'm called. The third one is temperance, which is by temperance is meant to be measure, harmony, art, and so on. And the fourth one is courage, but not vainglory, not the courage of vainglory, but the courage of empathy, so that you do something courageous, like you may go into a building to save someone, not for vainglory, but for the empathy that you don't want that person to suffer. But those four classical virtues must not be separated. And I admire people who adhere to that. So I'm deeply opposed to this Holocaust museum right next to our parliament, which represents those things, not the Kol Nidre prayer, where you nullify your oaths and vows, particularly those you're going to make with the Gentiles. So the good news is, and I am only interested in telling you positive good news, is that the French revisionist Vincent Renouard, he is challenging the British authorities online in his YouTube productions to do with this museum. He says that one, for the he wants the he challenges them with these are the points I'm reading out from his site. He says, one, for the manorial's designer to provide proof, a single element of proof that confirms the existence of the homicidal gas chamber. We know that there were gas chambers for disinfection, mm-hmm. and that is, of course, what Netanyahu was holding up at the UN. The disinfectant gas chamber, but that is not necessarily a homicidal gas chamber.
I'll be honest.
It wouldn't kill many.
Lady Michelle, I look at some of these Jewish stories too, and I think you guys are idiots. You know, you just go on and on like kids.
Yes.
You know?
Well, you know, it's an infantile. The Judaism is an infantile creed.
Yeah.
It's based on greed and vanity. Nothing could be simpler than it. There's no sophistication involved in Jewish behavior. It's they have one success schema and they keep using it over and over. There's no genius involved. So this man wants two things. He wants the proofs, and two, he wants a public debate between revisionists and historians to discuss the value of the evidence. Now, I think that his way of going, whilst we don't have the Holocaust denial law in our countries, we should try to foster his initiative because we want to have an open debate. That is the basis of our Hellenic tradition. And these anti-revisionist laws are simply anti-debate laws.
Yeah, and they're
anti-West. And so I'm all for that man's work because...
Last question, because we are running out of time. Your site, again, is, where did it go?
It's Jewish Republic.com.
Now, here's a question I want to pose to you. There are two issues. We did a show recently on a show called Blackbird Nine Trading Post, Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club. It's a former Mason whistleblower, sponsors some of this show. And when he said, he asked about the Jewish question and the Jewish problem. And what you're putting forward is really something to do with the Jewish question. But haven't Jews, for the meantime, kind of answered that question? Because the question was always, what do we do with our Jews? And we're at a stage now where we really aren't even, we can't even talk about it yet.
So your question was...
My question is, do you feel that you are at a point now, or we are getting to a point where at some point you can start to deal with a Jewish question, which is, what do we do with our Jews? Or do you see that the generation off?
No, I think it can happen in our lifetime. I think it's all coming very much to a head because of the help of the internet and the bravery of so many of people who have investigated these things and spoken out. I'm in great admiration, for instance, of Michael Hoffman. And Michael Hoffman is being quoted. He's the one who wrote Judaism Discovered. His website is magnificent. I met him at one of David Irving's conferences in Cincinnati. But the positive thing that's being given out in our universities in the moment, and why the Jews are going berserk, mm-hmm. is that they... there are leaflets being distributed on the UK campuses. And reading from the report from the Jewish News on the 7th of February this year, it says the leaflets deny the existence of gas chambers. One entitled Who Tells Us Our Story cites the film Denial, the one about David Irving. And they also quote what Mike Hoffman says about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, that ended up being a pretty good once we got settled in. Lady Michelle Renouf, everybody, we are done for the day. We'll be in touch. Thank you. I'll get you the files out. And thanks so much for coming up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much. We'll be in touch right after.
Next time, we'll talk about denial of the film.
Fair. Sounds great. All right, everybody. That's the show. See you all next week. Thanks for coming. Mm-hmm.